I'm podcaster and journalist Emma Gunnell-Wardner, although you can call me Emma Guns. And in these podcast conversations, I want to get to the bottom of those topics that can feel confusing and bamboozling, and sharing some incredible and very helpful insights about how to navigate this thing called life, love, and getting older and wiser is actress, podcaster, and entrepreneur Natalie Anderson.
And it's so easy for us as women to be called unreasonable. It's so easy for us to be labelled as difficult by just simply saying what we want. I'm a much softer person, and actually I think I thrive better when I am more honest and I am kind of, you know, do need to take a step back. That's when I've now felt like I've found a way to look after my well-being because I'm stepping away from that harsh mentality. I feel like I've lost a whole decade, at least, of my life. This is something I always say to my friends. I'm like, I am going to be that woman going, swearing and carrying on going, no, I don't think so, F off. It's so easy to just be labelled. And without being awful, women do it to women.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Natalie Anderson is on a mission to make life easier for women. With her website, podcast, and live events, The Capsule, founded in 2016, was a place to share recommendations in fashion, beauty, and lifestyle to take the guesswork and the legwork out of finding the things you need and the things that you love. Natalie very kindly invited me to be a guest on her podcast recently, and we had so much fun, got deep and meaningful very quickly, which we're quite good at here, and I thought she would be an incredible guest to join me on this episode of The Emma Gunn Show. And thankfully, when I asked, she agreed. So The Capsule is all about Natalie's little box of recommendations for a healthy, happy lifestyle. And one of the topics she's really delved into is perimenopause and also menopause, something that when she first started speaking to experts about it, realized that there were really limited resources and the lack of information available out there for women. But perhaps the starting point was her own anxiety, something she kept private. But as she stumbled across solutions, she would share them on The Capsule before opening up about her own experiences and creating a really valuable and trusted community of women who felt the same and was keen to find solutions and balms as she was. What started as a blog following her time as a columnist for Hello Magazine, one of the best-selling magazines in the country, The Capsule has turned into a huge enterprise, and I'm delighted to learn what more is to come from Natalie in The Capsule and find out what's working for her in 2024. But there is so much more to her story: acting, primetime TV, talent shows. So let's get stuck into it. Welcome to the podcast, Natalie. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Wow, that's a lot. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It is, and you're right. It is a lot because actually you have been working slash grafting for a really long time. Like, you are a real worker.
Yeah. I mean, I started in the entertainment industry professionally. Like, my first job on stage was when I was 12, and then in TV was when I was 15. So I've kind of navigated my way through this mad industry, really, in various different guises, you know. And I think that's the thing, is always being open to things, and to actually as well, if you do have a platform, if you're able to use it for a good thing as well. That's something that's always been really important to me. But yeah, it's been a long time.
Well, such a long time, and so varied. And I think as well, when you start that young, I mean, did you have to think like a grown-up? This is what has always really intrigued me, actually, about people who get into particularly the entertainment industry at such a young age. As much as you might need to be a child when the camera is on, do you have to essentially switch into almost grown-up mode when you're navigating what is essentially a business?
Yeah, 100%. You do have to have that kind of element about you. And I think you grow up very quickly because so much is placed on you. And, you know, I remember my mum popping me on a train when, in fact, I was just that little bit younger. I was 14 at the time when I first started the job. And my mum popped me on the train in Leeds, and I would go to London on that train with another co-actor of mine, and then our chaperone would pick us up at the other end. But this was the time before, like, your everyday mobile phone. You know, I didn't have a phone until I was about 16. So it was a level of trust, and a level of trust to me as well. You know, I would be like, you can trust me to do this. I had to behave like a grown up to make sure I got from A to B and meet my chaperone on time. And then, you know, you're getting yourself up in the morning, you've got to be on time for your calls and juggling schoolwork as well at the same time. So you have to juggle a lot if you're a child in the entertainment industry, which I suppose in some respects gets you ready for the real world, because you have to have a lot of good time management. Otherwise you just, you know, if you're late to set, if you're rude on set, you just won't work again. You know, word does get around. But yeah, for me, I felt like I had to grow up very quickly, which was one of the reasons, to be honest. My mum and I talked a lot about me going to drama school and not continuing in television straight away, because when I finished that job, I was coming up to 16. And it was a lot of pressure, again, being on the television as a teenager, thankfully in a time before social media. I mean, it was hard enough, you know, people stopping you on the bus, never mind like saying things on social media. But it was a conscious decision that I would go back to school and kind of go to drama school and be a bit more protected, learn a bit more about my craft before going back into the industry. And I'm really glad that I did, just because I do think it is a difficult place for young people, if you don't have the right support, if you know, you are, because you're treated like an adult, very much like what your original question was, because you are treated so much like an adult, you can kind of get lost a little bit.
That's really interesting. And I think you touched on something there about, that made me think about anxiety, actually, about the fact that if you're rude or if you're late or word gets around, so you're constantly having to perform, even when you're not on camera, you're constantly having to present a version of yourself, and that can become quite exhausting. And I think that can sometimes cause one's mental health to fray a little bit. Do you remember when anxiety set in?
Yeah. Do you know what? Actually, I think it probably was around about that time. It probably was around about that time where I was juggling a lot and I was juggling schoolwork. You know, I was coming up to my GCSEs. So I was already like doing mock exams, and but yet this was my chosen profession. It was something I'd wanted to do since I was like 5 years old. I'd done everything possible to get me into that position. So again, you do want to perform the best you can, but at the same time, my granddad had always said to me, you need to get an education. You have to get an education. You know, that's always going to be the thing that you'll fall back on. And I remember, you know, being in, again, on the bus, and people would shout your name, or they'd laugh at you, or they'd say things to you, and just suddenly being aware that people knew who you were and you couldn't go about messing around. Like some of my friends, like just normal, would mess about on the bus, and I'd be like, and I could feel that kind of level of, don't do that because it might affect me badly. You know, I've just got my foot in the door here, or don't do this, or just always feeling quite on alert, I suppose is the right way to think of it. And yeah, I think that's probably the time when it did start to kind of rear its ugly head, really, was me trying to control my own narrative, my own destiny, my own thing, and having some control over what felt a very uncontrollable and unpredictable time. And then obviously I was only a youngster then, you know, 15, 16, the very formative years, aren't they? So it kind of does make sense to me.
Yeah. And I think we're of a similar age. I'm a few years older than you, but I think I was talking to friends about this the other day, about if somebody had a meltdown in the office, like back in the early noughties, that would have been brewing for absolutely months. And it would have been a massive, like, there would have been an emotional explosion. And we can't even fathom what it's like for people today who kind of see it coming and say, I think I'm going to need some time off next week. We're like, yeah. What are you talking about? Why aren't you just running yourself ragged, letting it build up for months and then having a massive breakdown in the office? Yeah. Isn't that what people should be doing? But that's, I think, to your point, is kind of the thing that I think a lot of us, maybe back in the day, before we started talking about mental health, before we started talking about anxiety, we kept trying to keep a lid on it, which made the problem so much worse.
100%. And I think that's why I didn't talk about it for such a long time and, you know, really struggled in periods of my life, especially in my 20s, was I'm fine. I can keep it all together. And I think, again, we are from the same generation of women that were kind of, you know, out of the Madonna era and those very strong kind of, you know, Margaret Thatcher was our prime minister. And we had to be everything and you could be everything. And you had to be as strong as the male counterparts and you couldn't show any weakness. And there was very much this kind of mentality for women that and again it was the ladette culture in the 90s where it was like we can be as good as the boys, we can be as, you know, as loud, as brash, as strong, as powerful. And kind of getting rid of what I now believe is our power, is our feminine energy and our softness. You know, our softness can be our power. But I think when we were kind of coming through the ranks, it wasn't that. And so for me, when I would be struggling, I would be like, you've got to keep it together because that's what strong people do. Strong people keep it together. They're not weak. And that's how I thought, really, which I know now in my later years, in my 40s especially, which have been such an amazing freeing time for me. That's not the right mindset. Not for me anyway, not personally for me. It's not the right mindset for me. I'm a much softer person. And actually, I think I thrive better when I am more honest and I am kind of, you know, do need to take a step back. That's when I've now felt like I've found a way to look after my well-being because I'm stepping away from that harsh mentality.
And I think it's also boundaries and learning, forgetting about having boundaries, but just being able to articulate them and say to somebody, actually, that hurt. That stung, or I can't do that, or that makes me feel uncomfortable, which even as I'm saying them now, I can't imagine working them into a conversation. But they are things that we would just never lean into, but they're really important to get comfortable doing.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm definitely the world's best people pleaser in my 20s and 30s. Like, I could not say no for anything. No for me was just the worst thing. It made me feel like you were a selfish person. If you said no, you were an ungrateful person. You know, all these connotations that came with, if you say no, you'll never work again, all this stuff. And I've definitely, again, learned the power of no in my late 30s, 40s. And I have found a way to be comfortable with it. Don't get me wrong. It still can, you know, get me sometimes where I'm like, oh, I feel uncomfortable. But I think it's better now to be more honest, because I also think when you don't say no, resentment can build up and that can open up a whole host of other issues. Whereas actually saying, do you know what, actually, I'm not going to make it to that dinner, or actually, I've got other things that I need to do. If you've got the right people around you, they'll understand that and they get that. So you can feel safe within that. I suppose it's saying no to your more extended circle. That can be difficult. But I've definitely learned that it's an important thing to do, is to set those boundaries.
Do you think that no is actually something that you have to earn? And by that, I mean, Jane Fonda said it in that brilliant documentary that was on Sky Arts a couple of years ago, no is a complete sentence. But I feel as though Jane Fonda has earned the right to say no because she's Jane Fonda. But maybe it's absolutely appropriate and correct that I didn't say no in my 20s and 30s when I was at the beginning and trying to forge a name in my career. Perhaps it's only appropriate to start saying no now when you do have some time behind you. What do you think?
I kind of do agree with that to a certain extent. I think from a career perspective, I can completely understand that. I think from a personal perspective, that's a bit more tricky, because I think there's been times in my life, I think, where I've been taken advantage of. My kind nature or wanting to do things for people has been taken advantage of. And that's just caused me to feel hurt or upset or anguish. Whereas in your career, I think you do need to be open to so many opportunities, and you do need to learn, and you do need to kind of take the rough with the smooth and understand that it isn't always going to be, you're not always going to be a high flyer. At some point, you might end up back down the ladder, and it's a snakes and ladders game. You know, you've got to get back up again. So I think by being open to all those opportunities, you learn a lot of skills that you can transfer elsewhere. So it's quite a tricky one, that, because personally, I think I wish I'd have learned no earlier. But professionally, like you say, I'm kind of glad that I did go through all those different phases, and I'm still going through all those different phases now. And it's taught me to be open and be open to various opportunities that you think you might know what's going to happen, and something completely different happens, and you go, oh my God, if I hadn't have done that, then that wouldn't have happened. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a two-pronged thing, really.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it's not black and white, and we don't can't just give each other a definitive answer. You mentioned something there that I want to pick, actually, which is about snakes and ladders. Because I think in life and in career, it can be very tantalizing to think that everything just is on the ascent. So you do one job, then you'll get a better job, then you'll get a better job, then you'll get a better job. And with each better job will come more money and everything like that. And actually, as I'm getting a little bit more, a few more miles on the clock, I'm beginning to understand there is actually an element of snakes and ladders. And I would say last year that really kind of bit me, and I hadn't experienced it before, kind of like slipping down a snake. And I actually am trying to just accept and let go and not keep trying to scrabble up the ladder. And I wonder, again, from a young age, making quite significant decisions, like every decision that you must have made, particularly with acting, you don't know what domino that might knock over next, whether you were quite good at sensing whether something was the right decision or not.
I think I've definitely got better at it. I think in the beginning, it was always very difficult. And like I say, I kind of was like, just say yes to everything. And at drama school, it was like, keep your options open, which is why I did musical theatre as well. And I did courses on, because I went to LIPA, which was the Liverpool Institute, and that's founded by Sir Paul McCartney. So we had a lot of music within our school. And I kept my options open. You know, I would do different courses with the tech teams and, you know, different modules in management, just because, again, I wanted to learn all those different skills, because we were always told, try to be as open as possible, because you just don't know what's going to come next. But then as things progressed, and I remember being, because I did Pop Idol very many, many, many moons ago. And
I was going to bring it up.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience, you know, and it taught me a lot, that. And I'm really chuffed that I did it. And I remember getting signed by my agent at the time, who's an incredible agent, and then being approached by a management company, a music management company. So I had this kind of career where I could have gone either way. And I was doing a showcase. I was kind of getting an album together, and, you know, people were looking at me. Sony was looking at me. And then I'd gone up for these auditions. And I remember getting the call for the Royal at the same time as just coming out of Sony Music and doing a showcase for them. And it was a real kind of crossroads in my career where I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my heart was like, you've got to take the acting job. It's a firm offer. It's ITV. It's a huge brand. It's a huge company. It's, you know, Sunday evening television. It was that kind of Darling Buds of May kind of television that I'd grown up watching. And I just was like, you have to do this, because, I mean, if I think the acting industry is hard, the music industry is 20 times harder. And so for me, it was like, yeah, I said no to the music and I said yes to the acting. And there's been several points like that in my life where my mum always says, why does this always happen to you? You have these two jobs or these two offers on the table and we never know what to do. And it's, you know, it's difficult. And learning which ones are going to be the ones that you're going to progress with, that is hard. Because sometimes, especially when there's a lot of money involved, you know, you could be offered a lucrative job, But will that lucrative job necessarily get you to where you want to be, or will it just fill a hole for the time being? So I'm a big believer, and it's one of the reasons that I've always had like other things on the go, is because, and I say this to all young actors, make sure you've always got that secondary thing that you love so much that no matter what, when you're wanting to hold out for that next job, and you don't want to take something just from a monetary perspective, have that other thing that you really love so much that will keep you going and keep yourself worth, and, you know, might give you a little bit of an income, because that is going to be the thing that's going to help you differentiate when the job is worth it. If you see what I mean. So that's kind of what I've had to learn a lot in my many years. I hate saying how many years, but, you know, in a lot of years. And it's been, I definitely feel like I'm getting better at the sensing of which is the right direction for me.
Which I think is something that you can only learn over time. And you made me think about something Arnold Schwarzenegger said, which is never have a plan B, because if you have a plan B, then you're planning to fail. And I disagree with that fundamentally, because one of the most interesting actresses in Hollywood at the moment, I think, is Sydney Sweeney.
I love her.
Because she's obviously a really great actress, and she's one of those people, she's very telegenic. So she's on a screen, you can't help but look at her. But she does up vintage cars, and she's just bought this huge plot of land in LA that's basically derelict. But if she turns it around, she's going to make a huge profit on it. And you just sort of think, okay, that's really interesting. That's really clever. She's at the height of things at the moment. Mm-hmm. She really is on the rise. And yet she's doing quite interesting, sensible things that seem like, if all that ended tomorrow, she would still be having great fun.
I think so, because I think, you know, hopefully, I'm sure she has got a great support network around her, and parents and family or whomever. But in the acting industry or the entertainment industry, so much of what we do is based on that it can define us. And you can get like, you can feel, oh, that's how I define myself. That's how I value myself. And again, it's a very precarious industry. So if you don't have that next thing coming in, you can really start to doubt yourself and start to think, oh God, you know, well, am I not worth something? Whereas if you're succeeding in another area and you're let's just say she is doing that and that's fantastic and it becomes a huge success, she's kind of winning in two areas. So then if one is just takes its, you know, the foot off the gas a little bit, then excelling in the other area is going to keep that confidence. So then when there's an opportunity to go in for, whether it's not that Sydney Sweeney would, but an audition or something like that, you know, you've still got that confidence, because that's really what you need going forward. And it's the same with, you know, the women that I absolutely love and are my role models are people like Reese Witherspoon. I love Gwyneth Paltrow. I love Naomi Watts Jennifer Lopez and Jennifer Aniston. All of these women have now got incredible businesses and all of these women are thriving and in their, you know, coming up to their 50s or they're in their 50s and they've got these amazing businesses that they care so passionately about empowering other women and passing on those lessons. And they're the women that I look to every day and I'm like, wow. I mean, I love Naomi Watts for talking about the menopause and her early menopause. You know, for me, that was such a huge thing. As you said, with the capsule, I've touched on it quite a lot, the perimenopause. But when I went and learned that Naomi Watts went into menopause in her mid-30s, and I was like, wow, finally, an A-lister is talking about this, and that's going to make it better for the rest of us, you know, when we start having these more normal conversations. But I think it's the fact that these women have now seen that by having their own agency and by having their own businesses, they become stronger and they have more confidence. And that really inspires me. And I think that I would love for younger women or women, any women, all women in general, to be honest, to have that self-worth and that value. So always have that thing, that other thing. I disagree with the whole never have a plan B. I'm like, no, have one, because you don't know what's going to happen. And that might be the thing that makes you the thing, you know?
Totally. And I say this a lot, particularly about Jennifer Lopez, more about appearance wise, which is not meant to be as superficial as it sounds. But I think we are so lucky as somebody who's, how old is J-Lo now? 54, I think. I feel very lucky that somebody who's nearly 10 years older than me to have her in my eye line. Because if you look at, I was reading the other day that the characters in the Golden Girls were in their 50s.
Yeah, I know, it makes me laugh.
And it was almost so, and it was almost like, well, this is the end now and you must expire. And the fact that you actually, that we are getting to enjoy a longer life, mm-hmm. and seeing women like Jennifer's, Gwyneth.
All of the Jennifers, yeah, Nana as well.
Well, exactly. No, all in our eye line. It does rub off on us. And I think we should be grateful for that, actually, because I, like our mum's generation didn't have that.
No, they didn't. And I did an event just last year called the Perimeno Meetup, which was all about bridging the gap between pregnancy, perimenopause and menopause, and trying to get younger women to kind of be part of that conversation, you know, because from all the research that I've done and all the different guests that I've had, you know, you can start as early as 35. I mean, crikey, I wish I'd have known that. Because perimenopause symptoms, they trickle in. It's not an overnight thing. That the more overnight thing, and it's not even overnight, is when you actually reach menopause, and it's been that whole window, that 12 months of no period. But the time before that, you know, could be 15 years. And when we did this event, the amount of women that said to me afterwards that were all like my mum's age, my mum came along as well with friends, that said, oh my God, I really wish we'd have had this when I was younger, because I feel like I've lost a decade. I feel like I've lost a huge chunk of my life because no one was talking about it. And that's probably what I was experiencing. I was experiencing lack of confidence because of perimenopause symptoms. I was, you know, feeling like I wasn't myself. I didn't have any get up and go. My diet, my weight was changing. All of these things where women have kind of retreated and gone, oh, well, that's me done and faded back and become invisible. And that's the one of the biggest thing, isn't it, that women say, I've become invisible. But we now, as a generation of women and the women before us that we've just mentioned, they are the ones that are kind of really pioneering this conversation and making it better for us so that we don't become invisible and that we do stay in the workplace and that we, you know, are a force to be reckoned with and we stay in businesses. I mean, for me, that's so important to keep women in the workplace and to keep them confident and feeling empowered. It's kind of an exciting time to be our age, I think.
I absolutely agree with you. I really do. And I think I don't know about you, but I definitely think for the first time, I would say probably once I reached my 40s, I would walk into a room and I didn't have that desperation to get to the end of my sentence when I was trying to sell myself in somewhere because I was expecting to be cut off, which I would have been previously. And it's because I suddenly realized they weren't just seeing what I was saying in front of them in that moment. They were seeing the 20 years of experience as well. Mm-hmm. So I was able to slow down and actually share what I knew and hopefully add value without having to feel like I had to wrap it to the end of the sentence so that they didn't like change the subject.
Pick me.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think, but I don't know about you, but I definitely did that in my 20s and 30s where I perhaps didn't have the confidence in what I was saying. And so I would wrap it along or try and convince people and knew I wasn't really moving the needle. And then there was definitely a shift once I hit 40 and I could start saying things like, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, but then I do get that. And then I also want to like kick myself because I'm like, oh, you are so that woman that's like, well, when you get to my age, and I'm like, why am I doing that? Why am I saying that? But it is true though, when you do get to our age, you know, you do have that kind of 20 plus years of experience and we have been there and seen it and done it. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of things I absolutely don't know that I'm kind of like, wowzers, I didn't realize that, or I'm trying to learn or I'm trying to be open to. And you know, my son teaches me so much about social media. I mean, whether it's like, oh mum, this has happened on TikTok, and you know, that's not my world. So to have somebody that's kind of, you know, in that world or coming into that world, and I have to be aware of these things for his development as well, it's interesting. But yeah, I do laugh when I say, when you get to my age, I do feel like the old woman then, but that's all right being the old woman. We're looking to get to being old.
Yeah, I don't mind being the, I kind of make a joke and I call myself a dinosaur quite often these days But I do it not from a place of negativity, of just kind of like, because I've been around for a while. But we are also in this interesting space where, particularly in the industry I work in, a lot of young people are coming in. And as you say, they understand new technology and new media way more than I possibly could. Mm-hmm. But because that trumps old media, you have this weird thing of kind of little experience and experimental kind of trumping decades of experience and tried and tested, which is really bizarre.
And that must be so difficult in a lot of ways, because, you know, I think we had this conversation when we last chatted, was that there is a lot of mixed messaging around on social media and a lot of stuff that's not quite true, you know, mm-hmm. and you're able to like bust the myths and you're able to say, actually, this is this. But if someone's got a slightly fancier social media profile, you know, they might get more of the listening than you do. And that is difficult, because we're in danger then of misinformation, and we have to be careful of that, you know, because that can be quite dangerous. So that must be frustrating for you from that point of view as well.
If I didn't understand the bigger picture of it being a business, absolutely. But because the thing is that I can sit here with a lipstick and talk about the moisturizing core, the pigments, where the ingredients have been sourced, why it's worth the money it's worth, all of that kind of stuff. And I probably won't sell a single product, but someone else who's really attractive, has got great lighting, could just go and dab it on their lips and could sell 300.
And sell loads.
and that's of more value to the brand. So, and that I think is the bigger issue, is actually when correct information becomes less important than something else. But I mean, that's been going on for time immemorial. We can't really hear a lot about that. But yeah, it is mildly bizarre and intriguing and interesting. As somebody who, well, the capsule has been going around, it's 8 years old this year, isn't it?
It is 8 years old. And it's funny because it doesn't feel like that to me. I think it's because in its early years, it was just so much more of a hobby, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And you said it was about having a plan B. Was this a plan B that you wanted to turn into what it's become?
No, I didn't think of it like that at all until the pandemic. I had this idea. I mean, I had always been a massive fan of Goop, always. Like, because I love Gwyneth. I've loved her for years and years and years. And, you know, the whole Goop newsletter, how it originally started out, I loved everything to do with it. I loved the Tracy Anderson method. I was like, yep, I'm there. So that's me. So when I was doing my blog for Hello, I really enjoyed it. And I'd never thought of it before. The magazine said to me, would you be interested in it? And I was like, oh, yeah, well, I've never done that before. I used to love writing and I'll give it a go. So when I then decided, actually, I could do this on my own, the magazine was changing. They were doing different things with the blogging anyway. So it was like, right, OK, well, I'm going to take what I've learned and I'll set my own up. So when I originally started it, it was just a thing for me to go, and I like this, and I like that, you know, and this is where, and I had my son as well, who was quite young. So it was, this is where you could get this from, you know, as you, which I think was the original way that bloggers worked anyway. Yeah. And then as we got into I'd just come off tour. And in 2018, when I'd just been on quite a long tour, I was feeling really anxious, really, really anxious. And my anxiety was totally getting the better of me. And I was finding all these things, these different methods that worked for me. And like even things like Neom hand cream, that became my absolute go-to from day dot. I was like, oh my God, walking around like trying to smell this hand cream just because it made me feel better. And so I started sharing this kind of content on the website. And those were the articles that suddenly had this massive like hit in traffic. And it was weirdly in the night as well. And I was like, there must be other women that feel like me that are looking for things to help them at all hours of the night. And that said something to me that there were, at that time, no one was kind of fulfilling that space. Because for all, you know, Goop was talking about wellness, it was much more from a physical kind of point of view and dietary and nutrition and all that kind of stuff. The more of the actual anxiety, mental health aspect wasn't being as discussed. So for me, I was just like, well, I feel like this and clearly other women feel like this. So maybe I should try and do something about it. And I held a live event under the Capsule brand that was for women only, and it was all about wellness, anxiety, managing anxiety. And the traction that I got from that event made me think, my goodness, there's even more in this, and women aren't being looked after, and there's a huge space that women need help. They need more support. And somebody at that event said, you should do a podcast, you know, because from each guest that you had, I wanted to hear more of. And so later on that year, we launched the Capsule in Conversation. And it was originally, it was kind of a group of women all having a discussion, probably a bit like Jada Pinkett's kind of
podcast. A red table
talk. It was
talks,
a bit like
yeah.
a round, yeah, yeah. So it was like a round table kind of chat. And then as things progressed, I got more interested one-on-one. So I would then interview specifically each expert or each celebrity guest, so to speak, who'd had a similar experience. And from that, and because then the pandemic hit, so everyone was at home, it meant that I had more time to put into the podcast, and it meant that more people wanted to actually speak to other people. So it was a way of giving information to women and to men as well. You know, it was a way of giving information during a time that was really difficult to help women feel better. And from then it's just grown into this other thing that's like, I never expected it to be like that. Like I said, I never expected it to take on its own identity, and kind of now I feel I'm really finding my feet with what I want it to be. I've got lots of ideas in terms of audio drama, scripted content, scripted drama. Oh, wow. With all the stories that I've heard from different women, I'm like, wow, my gosh, why is this not on television? Why is this not on television? You know, particularly a lot of the stories around women and menopause and women and perimenopause and their true heartbreaking stories where they've been so let down, and there's been so many things that you think, why? Like, why has this happened? In a way, I suppose, like Mr. Bates and the post office, you know, the way that has lifted the lid on things.
Yeah,
I feel like there's so many issues with what I've learned, women's health issues and the gender health gap, that I would love to create eventually content and drama that is led by those stories and those topics. So that's my very long-term goal. But who knows? We'll have to see. I mean, that's kind of a bit pie in the sky.
No, I think it's brilliant. I also think, I was in the supermarket the other day and I was listening to, I think I was listening to a podcast, and it was talking about menopause. And I was looking around at the women who are working in the supermarket, and I thought, these are all women who are slightly older than me. They might be experiencing perimenopause. And yet there's no concession from their younger colleagues or any of their colleagues for the fact that they might be having terrible muscle aches that are new and peculiar to them, because this is just one of the many symptoms that you can have, the brain fog, all of those sorts of things. And yeah, it really did strike me. I remember being at an event, and there were a couple of women who were just very obviously physically uncomfortable using fans. I mean, you'll love this. Yeah. I've got a Goop fan in my drawer.
Oh my God. Yes. That is fantastic.
actually got this at the Goop event a few years ago. And I just thought, these are women who have probably been to the doctors and who have made all this effort to come to this event, but who are physically uncomfortable because of symptoms of menopause and perimenopause that aren't being managed. And that just feels really cruel now that we know. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Because of symptoms of menopause and perimenopause that aren't being managed. And that just feels really cruel now that we know.
Exactly. It does feel cruel. And it feels like, and like what I was saying before about my mum's generation, when they said, I feel like I've lost a whole decade at least of my life. That infuriates me. Incredible women leaving their jobs, you know, brilliant women that have risen to the top, suddenly feeling like they can't make the right decision. So they're retreating and leaving. And then, you know, when they get through menopause and they come out the other side and they're like, oh my gosh, they have this other second wind, so to speak. And then that space is gone then. And it's like, well, we need to keep these brilliant women and help them through this phase, because we do it in pregnancy. And this is the thing that's always really bugged me, in the sense that when I was pregnant, I remember people going, oh, she's got baby brain. She's got baby brain. You know, it's fine. And I didn't find it patronizing. I was like, yeah, I've got baby brain. And it was kind of a funny thing.
Yeah.
When a woman's got brain fog, it's pretty much the same, because it's a shift in your hormones, mm-hmm. but they're treated very differently. And that is infuriating, because it's like for when we're breeding, so to speak, we are given this whole level of respect and like, oh, look after the pregnant ladies, you know, but the women that are now not breeding, it's a whole different kind of kettle of fish. And I think for me, with the work that I've been doing with the capsule and with, you know, my live events and things, it's kind of about saying, no, we are still of incredible value and we need to look after ourselves to make sure that we feel valuable. But also society as well needs to realize that we are still valuable at this age. And, you know, going back to the point you made earlier, having all the Jennifers and the Gwyneths and everybody else, making those strides for us is making it a little bit easier to be heard at our level, like for our generation. I spoke to Dr. Naomi Potter, who did the menopausing book with Davina last year, and she said predominantly the majority of patients that come to her are in their early 40s, like 40, 41, 42, 43. That are asked, you know, can you help me? And that she's prescribing HRT to. Mm-hmm. Now, you would have never thought that. You know, if you'd have said HRT 2 years ago, that would have been something that's like, oh, well, that's for a lady that's 50 plus. But actually, it's a preventative medicine as well, you know, against osteoporosis. And I think having these normalized conversations about this will hopefully help and make women feel like you don't have to be old to take HRT. You don't have to be old, so to speak, to be in that perimenopausal phase. And it's fine. It's not a bad thing. So I think the stigma attached to aging, and particularly in your industry more than ever, you know, the whole aging in the beauty industry is just, it's always been anti-aging, anti this. I think that now we need to kind of embrace it more, and because they do in Eastern countries, you know, they considered it to having like the second spring.
Yeah, I mean, my industry is a funny one. I personally don't get too upset about the term anti-aging, because it's like anti-blemish. It's like, so I know people get really upset about it. I don't. I just think it's a really easy way of describing things. But I do think it's really fascinating that we have taken such strides, particularly in the fashion and beauty space, when it comes to inclusivity and diversity. Yet if you look at all of these inclusive and diverse campaigns, where is the old lady?
Yeah.
It's very, very rare that you will see an older woman. And actually, I have friends who are 60 plus who say, trust me, you have no idea what it's like, how invisible you become. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that obviously that's not the experience that continues going forward.
Definitely. And on screen as well, you know, I loved it when I was watching The Morning Show recently, and, you know, Jennifer Aniston had this amazing sex scene with Jon Hamm, and I was like, yes, this is brilliant. I mean, it's a bit much, but still, I was like, this is great. Because, you know, could you have imagined that like 10 years ago? Absolutely. That just wouldn't have happened, would it?
But no, it would have been actually, fade to black.
It would have been completely. And, you know, and there you have it, these people in their 50s and, you know, and older. I mean, Kevin Costner in Yellowstone. I love it. I'm like, this is great to see older people being represented on screen and, you know, and having these amazing characters and great stories and things that, you know, we can look forward to, and we don't feel like we have to be invisible, because I think it's been a combination of various things, whether it be on television, cinema, you know, in magazines. That's why, in some respects, we've become invisible, because we weren't seen. So it's nice to be able to think that actually things are changing.
Yeah, and I think I was talking to a friend about this last night and saying how I almost would love it when there is someone who's got 10 plus years on me that I can speak to and get their perspective, even though I'm very aware that actually their wealth of knowledge and their experience does, for some weird reason, feel as though it's not worth as much as it should be. Mm. And we were talking about how the younger generation, I'm doing what you're doing. I'm feeling like such an old
like
lady.
The old lady.
But okay, I'm older than people who are just coming into my industry. So that's the industry that I can reference. And it's very transactional. And I work, obviously, in my job, I work with a lot of people in public relations, and yet there are no public relations. It's not about relationship building. It's very transactional. Will you write about this lipstick, yes or no, kind of thing, for example? Mm-hmm. It's not that, obviously, listeners, you know. And I was talking to a friend about it last night, and I said, I just wish there were these older characters who used to exist in the industry, when you were brand new, you would be under their wing and you would learn how to host, how to talk to people, how to build a relationship, how to work a timeline so that you meet somebody then, and then you work towards something. And all of that seems to have just evaporated. And my friend wrote back to me, we've got a quite a big time difference, so we were on WhatsApp, and she said, ah, yes, the whole generation that just said no thank you to politeness. And it really made me laugh. And I don't want to give the younger generation a hard time, but there is something about social finesse that does seem to not be almost as like, oh, we don't need that anymore. It's just, let's just do something transactional.
Yeah, and the other thing that gets me, that really makes me laugh, because obviously I am kind of straddling these two very different industries, like with the work that I do with the capsule, we have a lot of beauty content, you know, we get a lot of press releases, and the ghosting that happens. I was like, oh my God, like, I've never experienced this before.
And give me an example.
Like, well, I can't really, but like, you know, you might be... For example, we were working on a giveaway with various different kind of beauty brands with the capsule, and it was a launch for a podcast and everything. And everything was going great, and it was like fine. And, you know, you're speaking to the PR and everything. And then suddenly you're like checking in and nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, checking right. Again. Absolutely nothing. Nope. Oh, no. And then you think, well, is it me? Have I done something? And I think that is so strange. But apparently that's just the way it is. And it's just the way it is because apparently this is what happens on the dating scene, in the PR world. And I've just found it really odd because I'm always like, okay, if you don't want to do something, it's like, no, thank you. That's not for us. There you go. But the whole kind of just cutting off is a really strange thing. And I've had this conversation a few times with different people saying, is it just me? And they're like, no, it's not just you, honestly. Because I think, am I wording things wrong? Like, but apparently it isn't just me.
But it's to what my friend said about saying no to politeness, is that it's that whole thing of they'll forget about it, as opposed to how would you like to be let down, basically? Like, I had a very similar situation in that somebody approached me to do some work for them. And I've worked for them quite a few times over the years. And so they came back and they were like, yeah, our budgets have been cut, so we can only offer you this. And it was kind of a token amount. And I thought, well, I've got a relationship with them, so I'll wait until there's more value to be added. So I went back and just sort of politely said, oh, thanks so much, blah, blah, nothing in return. And you do think it is all about relationship building. And I have to say, somebody yesterday just kept emailing me saying, you keep forgetting to do this. Can you send it now? I'm like, you're just annoying me now. And I think I'm just becoming a grumpy old lady.
But then you have every right to. That's fine. We're allowed to be this. And I can't wait for even more of this. This is something I always say to my friends. I'm like, I am going to be that woman going, swearing and carrying on, going, no, I don't think so. F off. Like, And I can't wait for it in a lot of ways. I've spent so much of my younger years being so polite and so like, yes. And my son says this about me: Mum, you say sorry before you've even done anything wrong. Like, oh, sorry. Even if I walk into a wall, I'm like, sorry. And I apologize all the time for things I haven't even done wrong.
I mean, you've said a couple of times that you're a people pleaser, but that's such a people pleasing thing, isn't it? That's such sorry to have been any bother, if you don't mind, if it's okay. But, you know, honestly, you don't have to, like, all of the things that come out of your mouth because you just don't want to say what you want.
Yeah, because Viola Davis actually put something on her, and I love her. I follow her on Insta, and she put something on her Instagram about be a bit unreasonable. You know, in 2024, just start being a bit unreasonable, because the more unreasonable you are, the more you'll get what you want. And I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of like that. I'm a bit scared of it still, but I'm a bit like, no, actually. And it's so easy for us as women to be called unreasonable. It's so easy for us to be labelled as difficult by just simply saying what we want, by simply saying, no, thank you, I don't want to do that. It's like, oof. Or, no, I'm not going to do that at that time. Oh, gosh, she's difficult. But am I just putting my boundaries, you know, setting my boundaries up, like what we talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. So there is that whole kind of narrative around women as well, when you know, if you say something out of line, you're bossy or a bitch or this or that. And I think for so many years, when I was a lot younger, I would fight against that so much. But as I've got older, again, like you say, you kind of earn your stripes, so you don't mind as much being labelled bossy or whatever.
Well, I mean, we've talked about Jennifer Lopez, so I'm going to talk about her again. Have you watched the documentary Halftime, where she prepares?
I haven't seen it yet. No, it's on my watch list.
Oh, I highly recommend it. You'll also almost certainly want the tie-dye tracksuit that she wears when she's in rehearsal. But that's another thing. I'll send you the link. But in it, so she's asked to headline the Super Bowl, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's one of the biggest things that you can do. And she's asked to co-perform with Shakira, which means that they get 13 minutes, but they've got to split that time between them somehow. And that's a really setting up the stage, taking it down. Obviously, it becomes quite stressful. And so there are times when she's on the phone to the guys from the NFL and she's saying, you asked me to do this. You've asked me to split the time with Shakira, which is great. It's going to be a real celebration of both of our music. But if we're going to do it, we've got to do it properly. And you hear her on the phone and you think, she's not being unreasonable. She's just saying she disagrees with you and she thinks this would be a better way to do it. And that's what's earned her the status of diva, because obviously she has got really good muscles and has flexed them for years of saying, no, I don't like that. I disagree with that. This is right. But no man gets called a diva.
Absolutely not. And you know, I see this with Taylor Swift. You know, like the whole thing with Taylor Swift. And, you know, I applaud her so much for everything that she's achieved and accomplished. And the fact that she has done a similar thing of going, no, I don't want to do this. And I'm not going to be labeled either, you know, through her music. She'll talk about kind of how people talk about her dating life and people talk about her, you know, behind her back and how she's demanding things. And I'm like, well, fair play to you. You know, you're a younger woman that is actually setting your stall out and showing other women as well, and not just young women, older women as well, that actually there's double standards going on here, and that's not fair. And it's something that we do need to challenge. Because again, it's just so easy to do, isn't it? It's so easy to just be labelled. And without being awful, women do it to women as well. It's not just a guy thing. It's not just like men that do it. Women do it to other women. And that can be difficult as well, I think, you know, because essentially we do kind of need to stick together and, you know, make changes across the board for all of us, rather than being segregated or pitted against each other. But we come from a generation where that was just the norm, you know, Britney versus Christina, or, you know, so-and-so versus so-and-so.
Yeah, it's true. And actually, I would say that I'm probably more worried of female criticism than I am of male criticism.
I get that. No, I get that, though. You know, it is, you do want to fit into the pack. I was talking to Anna Martha about this, about our need for community and our need for the sisterhood, which is really important, obviously, but how sometimes that intrinsic kind of, what's the word, primal need to be part of the pack and not cast out sometimes can create situations that are difficult, because essentially we do need to look after our own well-being, but because we don't want to be cast out by the pack, we'll kind of lean in and go, oh no, it's fine. And you end up doing things that you don't want to do, and it's such a weird primal thing that we do. And I don't think it's just women either. I think it's us as human beings. She was saying that if you're cast out on your own in, you know, back in the times of caveman times, you wouldn't have survived. Yeah. But there is no lion coming to eat you now, so you're allowed to kind of look after yourself.
It's true. I've definitely felt it career-wise with when you write for a magazine, when you speak someone else's lines, obviously that it's not you, but when you're creating your own content, like you are with the capsule or I am with the podcast and with my social media, the buck stops with you. And there are definitely times when I have stopped myself from posting things, and it's because of the criticism that I know it will receive, not to my face more than likely, but I'm just like, oh, I can just imagine them talking about it. And actually, this is my sort of thing for 2024, is stop worrying about what they're going to bitch about you behind your back, because it is none of your business.
Yeah.
But it's tough.
It is tough. And you know, I've done that myself before, where I've gone, oh, I'm going to post that. And, you know, you want to be brave and think, no, actually, I'm going to do this because I felt good in this picture or something, you know, and it's for me. And then you go, oh, but I can just imagine everybody laughing at me or talking about me or saying, and you think, well, they were going to do it anyway. So it's nothing to do with you. It's just forget that, you know, you've got to move aside from that. And it is a very difficult muscle to build, I think. I think it's really hard to do. But at the same time, for everything you don't do because of what you're thinking other people will think about you, you are limiting yourself and what you potentially could achieve. And that's so unfair on you. You know, and if you were your mum and you were watching that, or the inner child, the little you, you would be saying, no, don't you dare do that. Like, if it was to the little you, could you imagine? And you watched little you doing that, you'd be going, don't you dare. But you'd be infuriated and incensed. And I always have to try and remind myself of that, of the little person, and think about her.
Oh, interesting. So is that your guide, kind of? If you feel a wobble or you feel like, I'm not sure, is that what you go to?
Yeah, I think so. I think I look at my son and I think of the things that I say to him. And then I think, well, what would your mum say to you? And again, going back to that same podcast that I did with Anna, she talked a lot about self-parenting. And she said about how, you know, you get to a certain age and you realize that your parents are just like you. They didn't have it all together and they were flying by the seat of their pants, you know, 9 times out of 10. So what is it that you need that you can provide yourself? So if that's you looking at the little person that you are, your inner child, so to speak, and going, well, how can I parent you? You know, because I do know what you need, essentially, but I'm just maybe frightened to give it to you. But so it's about kind of you stepping out of yourself and going, right, well, now I'm going to look after you as best as I possibly could. And I really took so much away from that episode that I did with her about that, and about how to protect yourself and how to not have, like, we all grow up with, you know, things that we might learn, or learned behavior, or things that we might take on from our parents, not necessarily anything majorly bad either, just whether it's the odd criticism or it's the odd, you know, just the odd thing that sticks with us. And you can take that on board and you can end up taking it your whole life. But actually, it's you, it's your life. So you're in charge of it and you're in charge of yourself, essentially. So yeah, I did take a lot from that, and it has really helped me.
We'll have to put the link to that episode in the show notes. Anna's also done this podcast. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. She drops a lot of truth bombs in a very gentle way.
Yeah, in a gentle way, and you're like, oh my God. Like, you would go away and think about it for years to come.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've talked about perimenopause and menopause, and we've talked a little bit about anxiety, but I wonder if opening up the capsule and having the conversations that you're having, if there is a particular topic that you have perhaps stumbled upon that has really fascinated you that you didn't realize was going to. And also, furthermore, if what life would have been like if you hadn't started it, because something tells me that actually it's been, as much as it's for other people, it has been incredibly valuable for you and your own personal development.
1,000%. 100. I don't know what would have happened, to be honest, because where I was in 2018 was a very low place, and it was difficult for me to navigate. I'd been in situations like that before, like when I first had my son and I was working full time and I was, you know, really juggling a lot and I was basically burning out. And it wasn't good for me. You know, I was very anxious at that time, highly anxious, and I was very nervous all the time and I was doubting myself. And I could feel myself feeling like that again in like the back end of 2018. So having this outlet has genuinely helped me, and it does help me. And, you know, again, like going back to what I was saying before, when those jobs aren't necessarily coming that you really want and you've got to hold out for them, it gives me that sense of purpose and it gives me that sense of value and self-worth. And I do love, I love more than anything speaking to other women and getting the messages that I get that say, you know, this helped with this, or I've passed this on to my friend. And to know that in some way, shape or form, I've been able to match somebody up with the right information. You know, it's not me really. It's I'm just going, right, you needed this. So we found who can help you with that. And now we'll put you together and hopefully that's going to help you. Mm. That I really love doing that. And I love kind of making people feel good, I suppose. And I think what I've found within that space, and something that, again, I didn't think I was as passionate about, was the whole kind of female empowerment. I've always loved strong women. My mum was predominantly a single mum when I was very young. She had me at 17. My dad was very young as well. So their relationship was, you know, on and off when they were kids, basically. But it was predominantly my mum that brought me up. And she was a huge role model to me. And so I've always loved strong women. But then when I've seen the women that I've got to talk to retreating, that and understanding that space of when you get to 40, your 40s and 50s, I didn't realize how much was actually going on in those decades, like mentally for women. Mm. And I think that is something that I stumbled across. Even the whole perimenopause conversation, I mean, I didn't even have a clue what that was. It was an episode on the podcast. That's how it got, you know, brought up. And learning more about women of later decades, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and what their concerns are, that's been a real like eye-opener to me, and it's been incredibly interesting. And just learning more about that demographic of women and how, hopefully moving forward, I can navigate my own life, but also other women as well, help them navigate it. You know, if I wasn't doing the capsule, I could probably be sat here going, oh my God, I'm having a terrible day. You know, my anxiety is absolutely horrendous. But I know I'm like, well, you're 42 years old, you're perimenopausal, what do you expect? Like, you know, don't worry about it. You're fine. There's nothing abnormal about you.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have those conversations, if I hadn't have got that information, I don't know how I'd be feeling. And would I be too scared to go and see a doctor? Would I be like, oh, I've gone back to a dark place and now I'm weak? And instead of opening up this incredible conversation and meeting these incredible women that I have met that have really helped me, like you say, navigate my own life, but also share that information. And it feels, when I'm not acting, I get so much joy from this other side of my life, this other side of my life that helps me hopefully try and be a better person and, you know, to stay active, to try and be a better parent and a wife. That's all I really want, really, is just for people to feel good. And if I'm essentially getting to feel good as well, well, then that's a great thing, I think, hopefully.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? And I do think podcasting in particular has been wonderful for this kind of thing. I mean, this show's 8 years old, but I would say that I started listening to podcasts at least 4 or 5 years before that, mainly out of the States, because I think they were the territory that really embraced it first. And the idea of having these conversations where you could really deep dive into a common experience like perimenopause was actually unheard of. They were very, mm-hmm. those conversations would have been very private. And what you were saying about, I'm having a day where I feel a bit brain foggy or I feel a bit down. If you'd gone to the doctor about that, and we didn't have any of these podcasts, you would have been given antidepressants, which is not the right thing for what you're going through. Mm-hmm. So I am 100% with you. I think it's really empowering. And I think the challenge now with so many platforms is being able to listen to one podcast with one tone of information and another podcast with maybe a slightly differing tone, maybe a slightly different opinion, and being able to filter that out. So I do think the job for the consumer, whether it's the listener, the reader, has become a little bit harder because there's so many voices out there and they're all really quite convincing.
Absolutely. But I think that's the same with reading though. Like you can read so many different books, you can read so many different takes on things. It's you at least having the information to make an informed decision. So how you choose to interpret that, I think, is, like you say, that's up to the consumer or the listener or whomever. But at least they have the option to have that information, which I think, particularly for women's health, you know, more than such a closed shop of, like you said, things that were hushed conversations over the garden fence or the mother's meeting or the coffee morning or all of these things where it wasn't even discussed. You know, so many women that went through these phases and didn't even get to talk about it. Yeah. And you look at, you know, the amount of relationships that have broken down or women that haven't been, you know, particularly well in the, you know, the 45 to 54 bracket, age bracket. And I think that, like you say, knowing what now to give your audience, that is the challenge. That's definitely the challenge for me because I do have so many different ideas and so many different things that I'm interested in. And, you know, it isn't just a conversation about perimenopause for me, not with the capsule. It is one area that I'm very passionate about. However, you know, we've just done a podcast just this week about endometriosis. So there's all kinds of different topics across women's health. It could be financial well-being another week, because that's, again, something that's really important. I think, but trying to tie it all together so that the person that lands on us knows what they're getting, that is the challenge of how do we put this and make it coherent under one umbrella? But I'm not a business person. You know, I never expected to be doing this. I never thought I'd be doing this. I've not got a degree in business or media or anything like that. I did dancing and singing most of my life. And here I am. But again, I love that. I love the fact that I'm learning something new. And what's been really interesting for me is that transferring the skills that I've learned building the capsule into my acting work, you know, when I'm approaching a role, particularly a role of a woman in her 40s now, there's just something different that I can bring to a role now, having my own business. Yeah. And I don't know whether it's a self-assuredness, I don't know whether it's a confidence, but it's something that makes me feel that when I sit in the chair to do an audition or a self-tape or something else, that I've just got something about me that is just a bit different, I suppose, just a bit different and a bit more, confident.
It's a robustness, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you like. Yeah, I completely understand. Well, I think what you're creating and can have created and continue to create is phenomenal. And I think you've had some great conversations. You've had some great people.
Thank you.
I know that you said that two of your dream guests are also two of my dream guests. I honestly think if I ever found myself in the same room as Joan Collins, I would curtsy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah.
And the same with Joanna Lumley.
I know, but yeah, can you believe I was in a room with Joanna?
Well, yeah. I didn't know if you had been, of course you had, because you have to, did you curtsy?
I didn't curtsy to her. She's everything that you want her to be. Yeah. She's just such a lovely, gracious, funny, charismatic woman. And we sat next to each other and I was talking about what did I say? We were talking about our diets in this country. And I was saying, well, we've got no chance really, have we? Because, you know, we live in England and it's freezing cold and all we ever want is fish and chips. And she was sat next to me. She went, yes, darling, I completely understand. Like, I love that. And in her very Joanna Lumley kind of way, she agreed with me. And that kind of opened our conversation up. But it was this kind of mutual understanding of England, and you know, and yeah, of course, we're not going to want to be eating lettuce all the time. We live here.
Yeah.
And so we love Yorkshire puddings and we love fish and chips and that's, you know, and gravy and things. And that's who we are. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. So we had a shared love of good old fashioned British food. And yeah, and we were obviously on set together and everything. And she is a genuinely lovely, incredibly charismatic woman, like I said, everything you wanted to be.
Yeah. And no, so this is the show. Oh, did you say it was top 10 in 91 countries on Netflix?
Number one.
Top five. Oh, number one in, okay, goodness me. So Fool Me Once, you're in this, Michelle Keegan's in it, Joanna Lumley's in it. And one of the best things about this, there's a lot of great things about it, but you get to see Joanna Lumley swear with venom. And it's amazing. I actually rewound it and watched it again because I was like, that was so great. It was like she really built up to it and spat it out. It was amazing.
It was. And it was very different to her Hatsy days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when she used to swear a lot. Joanna was incredible. I mean, Michelle and Joanna together were both incredible in this, in all of their scenes, but in that particular scene, in that showdown scene, they were so fantastic. And like you say, getting to see both of them, actually, Michelle as well, you know, it's just been such a joy to be part of and to see the success of it for everyone involved, for everyone that's worked so hard on it. And I just need to give a big shout out as well to Jackie, our head of costume. So Jackie Levy is the head of costume, and the work that she has done with coats.
Oh my God.
The coats are everywhere. But she is an incredible like costume mistress and she's just brilliant. But she is now the queen of coats, Jackie.
Yeah, I must admit, I was watching it the other night and I was like, I want everything that Michelle Keegan is wearing. And then Joanna Lumley's character says that she's not taking much pride in her appearance. And I was watching it at the same time with a friend. I was like, that's basically what I wear every day. So like, I basically, according to Joanna Lumley's character, I was a scruff, but I'll take it. She can call me a scruff any day.
Nah, it's all right. That's Judith. Judith's very much like that as a character.
Yes.
But like I say, it's been a huge joy for everyone involved that it's done so well. And I think we'll continue to do really well as well. So, you know, who knows?
More to come, more of the same. Well, listen, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you. I am so glad that we got to do this. I loved being on the capsule in conversation.
Thank you.
And the capsule really is, I mean, if you just start dabbling in that website and you just get lost, there is so much helpful information there. Is there anything that is working for you in 2024 that is going to be big on the capsule that people should know about? Because obviously I'll be putting the links to you and the podcast and everything in the show notes.
So I'm going to be dropping in more of my own kind of notes and blogs and things. So my own thoughts into the website this year. I kind of stepped back a bit from that last year, just because I was filming a lot as well. But then this year, I'm kind of really hoping I can get back to that. And there's been a few little things that I'm sticking to, like my exercise snacking, which I learned from lovely Lavinia. But she's doing exercise snacking, and that for me is really working. So I just have like a little checklist that I do throughout the day, and it literally takes me 3 minutes to do so many press ups, so many sit ups, many things, little things. And by the time I get to the end of the day, I'm like, wow, I've done all that today.
Yeah.
Crikey. And it literally takes me 2 to 3 minutes every time, and that's it. But that really is working for me. And it makes, and again, it's that those small little wins, just those small wins that go a long way that you think, yeah, actually, by the time we get to March, I'm going to have guns.
So what is it? Small wins, big results. Let's go.
That's
for
right.
It. This is going to be it. Listeners, the links to the capsule, the links to Natalie, the links to everything that we've discussed will be in the show notes. But this has been such a joy. Please come back soon.
Oh, thank you. And vice versa. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I do hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time hugely. If you did enjoy it and you never want to miss an episode, then please do hit the subscribe button wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. It's also where you get the opportunity to leave a 5-star review and a rating for how you feel about the show, and I'd be so grateful if you wouldn't mind leaving one. If you want to get in touch with me, email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Or you can DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. If you fancy chatting to me and thousands of other fellow listeners of the podcast, then click the link to join the Facebook forum. The link to join is in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. You have to answer a couple of questions, but we cannot wait to see you there. Come over and join the conversation. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.